Free speech is not for wimps. It is far easier to remain silent and avoid standing out in the sea of conformists shaped by the prevailing spirit of the age. Courage always dies first, and then freedom. From Birgit Keller, March 16, 2026. The tuba player had been arrested in Berlin. Together with his large tuba, he sat in the police car they had put him in. His offense consisted of playing the German folk song, Die Gedanken sind frei, by August Heinrich Hoffmann von Fallersleben in the open air on Potsdamer Platz with 500 other musicians. The performance was meant to draw attention, in the middle of the COVID lockdowns, to the de facto prohibition of artistic freedom. Such dissent was more than the full force of the state could tolerate. The Irish teacher Enoch Burke spent more than 500 days in prison. He had been suspended because he refused to address one of his students, using new pronouns and a newly declared gender. His resistance to the idea of self-identified gender cost him his freedom. The judge ordered coercive detention in order to prevent any repetition. In Bavaria, a pensioner is being prosecuted. Police searched his home after he referred to then-Vice Chancellor Robert Habeck as a Schwachkopf in a humorous internet image. It was only one among more than 800 criminal complaints filed by the minister. His colleague Annalena Baerbock filed complaints against 500 citizens. The FDP politician, Marie-Agnes Strack-Zimmermann, reached more than 1,400. The current chancellor, Friedrich Merz, has likewise filed hundreds of complaints against expressions of opinion by his own voters. Three prosecutors from Göttingen boast in a 2025 British television documentary, laughing mockingly, about how they send police to citizens' homes over speech-related offenses. They explain how confiscating mobile phones already punishes citizens, even before a verdict has been reached. Since 2016, the number of criminal investigations into speech offenses in the German state of Lower Saxony has increased 15-fold, reaching 35,000 investigations in 2024 alone. The more the state claims to rescue democracy through a campaign against hate and agitation, the more citizens' freedom of speech is restricted through intimidation and prosecution. Revolutions eventually devour their children. The West is now consuming the foundations of its own idea. Truth needs a good lawyer. Those who bring unwelcome truths have always lived dangerously. In ancient Rome, they were famously beheaded. Even Jesus reached only about the age of 35 before proclaiming that the truth would set mankind free, a message that cost him his life. A German proverb says that truth needs a fast horse. In the year 2026, it needs above all a good lawyer. The frequently invoked cancel culture of our time has produced several phenomena. One is that its existence is consistently denied by those on the left who practice it most passionately. They relentlessly pursue anyone who refuses to submit to the ideas of an aggressive LGBTQ lobby, anyone who considers it madness to run an industrial society with cargo bikes and wind turbines in the name of saving the climate, or anyone who sees a policy of open borders as a danger to the lives and security of the native population. But censorship is also practiced by those who claim to defend freedom of speech. One should not forget that the establishment of 7 state-funded reporting offices for hate crimes below the threshold of criminal liability, meaning for legal expressions of opinion, was implemented under the leadership of the CDU. And while hardly any politician currently denounces the decline of free speech in Europe more loudly than the eccentric US President Donald Trump, it is the same Trump who simultaneously denies visas to German NGO activists and even to former EU Commissioner Thierry Breton because he does not tolerate their opinions. Activists who supported the EU's Digital Services Act and thereby attempted to restrict the freedom of speech of millions of citizens. Yet even on the conservative side, censorship appears to have become an acceptable tool. No one has the right to obey. At the same time, restrictions on freedom have always produced heroes. People who never intended to become famous, but who simply follow their conscience. The tuba players and teachers, the judges, doctors, and writers, and also the many anonymous individuals who raise their voices in decisive moments, often standing alone. Freedom of speech is not just one freedom among others. It is the mother of all freedoms. If a person no longer has the right to express an opinion, how could that person ever implement their view of the world? If a problem may not even be named, how could it ever be solved? The ability to call things by their name without being punished socially, legally, or physically is the first civic right that must be defended. The power of words has an almost magical force, the right word at the right time can move mountains and mobilize masses. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. From that Word, the world itself was said to have been created. The idea that words shape reality has existed since the beginning of human history. One need not be religious to grasp the primal force contained in that biblical line from the Gospel of John. Every voodoo priest and every gender studies professor attempts the same thing, to reshape reality through words. That is why it is alarming when, in countries proud of their liberal democratic achievements, words are once again being banned. When government-funded language guides prescribe the correct terminology citizens must use, often in order to conceal the truth behind words. It is alarming because the first signs of lies and cowardice appear when a state forces its citizens, under threat of fines, to call a man a woman. It is a totalitarian precursor when people in England are arrested for silently praying outside abortion clinics. The system fears not only the free word, it fears even the free thought. Did we not once believe that thought crimes existed only in dystopian literature from our school days, in the works of Kafka, Orwell, and Huxley? Were we too young to understand how quickly societies can tilt when Hannah Arendt's warning is ignored and citizens allow themselves to obey when they ought instead to stand up and resist? Atmosphere of lack of freedom. I do not know how often I have heard people say, apologetically, that they cannot afford to say certain things because they have families or depend on their jobs. And in the West today, it is not even about life and death. The inner person dies first, before the physical body is taken. Freedom of speech dies, courage dies, and with it, the ground is prepared for whatever horrors those in power may devise. An atmosphere of unfreedom creates fear. Fear produces obedience. Obedience produces conformity, and eventually complicity. Thus, the history of totalitarian regimes is always a history of cowardice. It is almost physically painful to pick up a book like The Gulag Archipelago by Alexander Solzhenitsyn. The horror lies not only in the descriptions of the labor camps, but in the atmosphere of fear that led people not to intervene and their friends were arrested, while others allowed themselves to be taken away in the mistaken hope that good behavior might save them. Visible obedience cancel culture, the culture of erasing and eliminating supposedly wrong thoughts, writings, and people, is always an expression of a system of fear. Just as Winston Smith in George Orwell's novel 1984 is tortured until he not only claims, but truly believes that he sees only four fingers where there are five, modern totalitarians are not satisfied with mere tolerance toward other viewpoints. They demand submission. They demand agreement. They demand participation and public declarations of loyalty to ideas in which we may not believe. Only once we dutifully raise our rainbow flag for Pride Year above our rooftops are we out of danger. Only once we faithfully honor the religion of climate salvation, abstain from meat, and transport our children to school on cargo bicycles do we cease to appear suspicious. Only once we place our pronouns on business cards and gravestones, not because we have forgotten our sex, or because it cannot be seen, but in order to obediently question the obvious reality of our womanhood or manhood, do we demonstrate that we accept the new reality in which nature, reason, and science no longer have the final say, but the state and its judiciary. A short video that plays continuously at the Yad Vashem Holocaust Memorial in Jerusalem has remained etched in my memory. In it, an elderly man recounts how he was taken from school as a child and brought to deportation. The road passed the houses of his neighbors, who stood by the roadside watching as people were driven into wagons. No one intervened. No one stood up. The man says that until that morning, he had believed those people were his friends. But when he saw them watching silently and doing nothing, he lost his faith in humanity. Where is the difference today? When people obediently go along with everything, when they are asked to exclude those who refuse to submit to the language codes of the new age, the demands of the prevailing spirit, and the pressures of those in power, because otherwise they risk their own position. Living in truth, demanded the Czech dissident Václav Havel. Live not by lies, were at Solzhenitsyn. Today we are told that there are multiple truths, my truth, your truth, as though there were no longer any objective standard. But once truth itself has died and returned merely as a plurality of truths, then anything becomes possible. Then the science becomes only the thesis of the ideology currently in power. Then, in Orwell's words, war becomes another form of peace, ignorance the new strength, and freedom slavery. Anyone who accepts such a society as a passive spectator, an obedient follower,